Today on Inverted Planet, we're going to go visit the podcast of the Christian Medical and Dental Association's CMDA Matters, because I was their honored guest this week on the program, and they wanted to talk about pro-life issues and the Jewish perspective, and I think you will find it a fascinating conversation.
You're listening to CMDA Matters, the weekly podcast of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations, and I'm your host, Dr. Mike Chupp. This week, I have a most unusual guest. In fact, our studio engineer, Rusty, who's worked with Dr. David Stevens for many years to produce our Christian Doctor's Digest, tells me that we've never had a guest quite like Rabbi Yaakov Menken, an Orthodox Jewish rabbi who has been guiding the Coalition for Jewish Values since 2017. This interview was so good that we actually kept most of it for you today. And so it's a little longer than you're used to, about 30 minutes, but I trust you will find this conversation most stimulating and encouraging at a time when traditional Judeo-Christian values are under assault more than ever in our nation. Let's listen in on my conversation with Rabbi Menken as I was joined by Dr. Jeff Barrows, our Senior Vice President for Bioethics and Public Policy. Well, it is indeed a pleasure today to welcome to CMDA Matters Rabbi Yaakov Menken, who is the Managing Director of the Coalition for Jewish Values. Now, the Coalition for Jewish Values, or CJV, I believe Rabbi Menken refers to it, was created in 2017 to represent authentic Jewish thought as applied to public policy. And while they officially represent over 1,500 rabbis, in reality, they represent the overwhelming consensus of American rabbinic views. He is the founding director of Project Genesis, the architect of Torah.org. I don't know how many of our listeners have been to Torah.org, but maybe after the program, TorahMedia.com, and other leading internet resources for Jewish outreach and education. He has a degree, a BSE in computer science from Princeton, and pursued his rabbinic studies at Yeshivos in both the U.S. and Israel. He has had plenty of articles published in outlets, Newsweek, New York Observer, Daily Wire, and American Thinker, as well as the Jerusalem Post, the Jewish World Review, and Times of Israel. Well, I was introduced to you, Rabbi Menken, by a mutual friend, Dr. Donna Harrison from the American Association of Pro-Life OBGYNs. And when we talked last week, it turns out you're also a good friend and co-worker with our Director for Government Relations, Jonathan Embody. So welcome to the program, joining my Senior Vice President for Public Policy and Bioethics, Jeff Barrows, today. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, tell us, or tell our listeners, what is the Coalition for Jewish Values? I mentioned a couple of basic facts, but on the conservative side, can you estimate what portion of the American Jewish community that you represent?
As you said in that introduction there, the overwhelming majority of the Orthodox community, of course, is hewing to traditional values and definitely prefers these positions. And yet so much of what you hear in the media as representing the so-called Jewish view is left-wing progressive politics masquerading with a nice Jewish title. You know, you call it Tikkun Olam, repairing the world, and then all of a sudden anything goes and anything is Jewish. And it doesn't really work that way. And so a group of rabbis were bemoaning the state of affairs and how an authentic Jewish view was not being represented. And that is why in 2017 we formed our organization. To answer separately your question about the portion of the Jewish community that we represent, so it's obviously not just the Orthodox rabbis, but the overwhelming majority of Orthodox Jews, but also there's a lot of non-Orthodox Jews who are very frustrated by what they hear in liberal congregations, where you're as likely to hear a left-wing political lesson as an actual religious sermon. to the point that one congregant in a Reform congregation told me that he felt like the movement to which he belongs had become a political movement masquerading as a religious denomination.
Well, I was surfing your website last night and just looking over numerous articles that you've personally written, as well as those who are also on your leadership team, and noticed that one of the fights that you're fighting is to not be labeled as ultra-Orthodox, but to hang on to that term Orthodox.
Well, that's very true, simply because this idea of ultra is a pejorative. It's a way of sticking them out on the extreme. Ultra is a positive term when applied to an inanimate object. An ultra-sharp razor, an ultra-fine pen, ultra GT graphics card, these are all positive things. But you apply, nobody wants to be neither ultra-conservative nor ultra-liberal. And ultra-religious reminds you of Osama bin Laden.
Sure.
So, yeah, so that's just a classic example of how you find the left just trying to demean in whatever subtle form they can those who hew to authentic and traditional religious views.
Rabbi Menken, I think it would be helpful to me, and I'm sure many of our listeners as evangelical Christians, to maybe clear up a little bit of confusion, because my understanding is that there are three major different streams within Judaism in the United States: the Reformed, the Conservative, and then the Orthodox. If you would just take a couple of minutes to explain the differences between those for us evangelical Christians, that would, I think, be very helpful.
Okay, so the truth is that Reformed Judaism exists since the 19th century. It's actually, when you look at the length of Jewish history, it's a very recent development. And like many experiments with deviating from the traditional Jewish view, it doesn't have a whole lot of longevity. This is something that's very regrettable. But today, the biggest Jewish group in America is not a member of any of the three denominations, but rather the Jews of no religion or the Jews of no formal affiliation. And that's a regrettable phenomenon. We're going to lose many of these Jews and their descendants to the Jewish community. But it is the sad result of this type of moving away. Unfortunately, the conservative movement, which was formed actually in the United States in the early 20th century, they wanted to preserve. It was about conserving Judaism. They were actually a reaction to Reform. But they, too, deviated at first a minor degree and then an increasing degree over time. As far as we in the traditional community see it, there are really only two denominations: observing the Torah that we were given and not observing the Torah that we were given. And that means the written as well as the oral law, the Jewish tradition, the Talmud, which teaches us how to go about our daily lives. And that's what really makes the difference. When it comes to the type of values issues that we're talking about, learning Talmud and following those religious teachings necessitates that you value religious freedom and traditional values and biblical values and biblical morality. It all comes out of that same place. In fact, when we got started, a very left-wing Jewish journal commented about us that we seem to be espousing views more often associated with your crowd, the evangelical Christians, mm-hmm. To which our unwritten response was, well, yeah, where do you think they got them from?
Who came first?
Right. Where did the evangelicals get those crazy ideas?
How do you respond when you're talking to a group of media reps or to a group of conservative evangelical Christians and the audience certainly that's listening to this podcast in terms of the political stand and perspective of the majority of the Jewish people today?
There's actually a piece I wrote in Newsweek that I think is very helpful for this. It's about how there's not one Jewish vote. There are two, and they are diametrically opposed. And you can search that out on Newsweek pretty easily or via our website, coalitionforjewishvalues.org. The case that I lay out there is that the left is largely not motivated by Jewish values. And yet they are the vast majority of the Jewish community overall today. Only about 10% of American Jews today are Orthodox. It used to be actually a much more dramatic. The Reform was completely dominant in America in the late 19th century. So this is actually a huge reversal. And if you look at the numbers today, the Orthodox are the only population that is growing, besides, as I mentioned earlier, the Jews of no affiliation, of no religion. So there's a much more positive thing coming along. What I do make the case is that if you look at the vast majority of rabbis, in the Orthodox community, it is very common to become a rabbi. Even a person who later becomes an accountant or a doctor or a lawyer, I am sure that you know medical doctors personally who are actually rabbis as far as their training, who have a great deal of understanding of our traditional literature, certainly far more so than one of these rabbis of the liberal schools. So, and yet he's a practicing physician, or she. Could, by the way, there's any number of women who also, they don't have the same rabbinic studies that the men do, but they also have a great deal of advanced Jewish education on their way to a medical career or whatever else that they do professionally in their lives. And as a result, the vast majority of rabbis in America follow traditional views.
Rabbi Menken, how do you think presenting a Jewish view today can impact the way that pro-life and pro-family positions are looked at by others, especially by the secular media?
It's interesting. The same left-wing outlet that had made that comment about us sounding like evangelicals, also at one point, a reporter from the Forward asked me, if that's the outlet I was referring to in New York, the reporter asked me, and I'm trying to use the right language, but it was, don't you feel that by espousing this pro-life position, it's a violation of church and state? And that has become almost the go-to argument of those on the left, it seems, at least to me, with regards to countering pro-life views. Oh, you're getting that view from the Bible, you're getting that view from religion, therefore it's a violation of church and state to use that. And of course, they reinforce that by saying that's a Christian position. Only Christians believe that. The Jewish view is different. Therefore, it's a uniquely partisan or parochial view and doesn't belong in American public policy. On the contrary, it's a foundational element of Judeo-Christian ethics to value human life. And when you change that argument just by saying, wait a minute, the Jewish rabbinate feels exactly the same way, so then all of a sudden, you've gone from parochial view to foundational. This idea of Judeo-Christian ethics is that upon which the founding fathers built American jurisprudence. How can you claim that that's a violation of the church and state separation that they set up?
So, Rabbi Menken, when you hear that, when you say the average rabbi hears that phrase, Judeo-Christian view or ethics, is that something that's warming that you embrace? Would you say when you hear that phrase?
Well, I joke about this, that we call it cultural appropriation. You have to know what cultural appropriation is. It's this idea that it's somehow bad to borrow ideas and learn from other cultures. It's basically a nice way of saying there's no hope for humanity because we can't learn the best of what everybody's got to offer. Mm. The idea that Christians take these ethical foundational principles and want to spread them around is a great thing, is a very positive thing. If you look at that which makes America what America is and when what founds any first world civilization, none of these are new progressive ideas. Valuing human life, valuing peace over warfare, universal justice, universal education, family, social responsibility and charity, all of those things come right out of the Bible. So we should be embracing the idea that we always knew how to do first world civilization. We're just finally getting it right. Well, I can name a kingdom that was doing it right 3,000 years ago, but it's had a hiatus.
Well, since I'm joined by my colleague, Dr. Barrows, an OBGYN, and we had an opportunity again last week to talk a little bit about this. You mentioned to me that you've really never come across an OBGYN who was not staunchly defensive of the life of the mother. We certainly share our opposition to abortion, But we have to recognize there are rare occasions in which an OBGYN is faced with, and I know it's rare. Dr. Burrows, you might comment on how often it happens that truly an abortion as opposed to delivering the baby to protect the mom happens.
Well, I can say that with almost 20 years of practice, there's only one episode that I remember that we really had to end a pregnancy, and we didn't do it through abortion. It was about 22 weeks, and we transferred the mother down to a major center and induced labor so that she could have a baby, a live baby, and give the baby a chance to survive. I cannot remember a single instance in 20 years of practice where we had to terminate a pregnancy before potential viability. It's just so, so rare.
Rabbi Menken, your perspective, the Jewish view of abortion and sanctity of life from conception.
We have sort of a loophole about the first 40 days after conception when it is still considered cells. But that's what we call very much an edge case. After 40 days, you don't even know. I don't actually know. How early in a pregnancy do you know if it's an ectopic pregnancy, for example?
You'll discover that depending on where the pregnancy is located, but it's certainly within about 3 to 4 weeks of the missed period.
So it is potentially within those 40 days, and that would be that for us that would be a procedure that in that type of situation the baby's not going to be viable anyway and is going to endanger the mother's life. For us, there's no question about that. What there is this fundamental idea that, yes, in the womb, it's not even, we don't even have to be theologians here. A child in the womb learns to recognize his or her mother's heartbeat, his or her parents' voices. And we know this, that psychologically afterwards, those things are beneficial to keeping the baby calm because that's familiar to the newborn baby. So how can you tell me that baby wasn't a sentient being in the womb? This idea that life begins at birth is patently counter medical science. Forget about the theology for a minute. But theologically, we certainly recognize, the famous verse in Jeremiah where God says to him, I knew you from the womb. I knew and I appointed you to be this prophet. And of course, the famous story of Rebecca, Isaac's wife, who has twins in her womb and doesn't understand why the twins are, why there's so much activity in her womb. And then it's the rabbi who tells her, you're carrying twins. So then, and the twins have distinct characters.
Well, and I'm thinking King Solomon in Ecclesiastes said something like, just as you can't understand the path of the wind, or the mystery of a tiny baby growing in its mother's womb, so you cannot understand the activity of God who does all things. So clearly throughout the Old Testament scriptures, Hebrew scriptures, references to life, personhood designed by God within before birth, certainly.
As you mentioned there in the intro, I have a Bachelor of Science in Engineering and Computers. I actually went to school with Jeff Bezos. He went to do Amazon. I did something better. but if you look at the amazing progress that has been made in computer science, there's only one area that they've completely flopped on, and that is getting a computer to think. The early computer scientists firmly believed that you just had to get up to a certain level of processing power, and all of a sudden, you're going to have the ability to have consciousness and a computer that thought for itself and could make independent decisions that had nothing to do with the programming that the computer received. The initial plan was to develop a computer with the brain of a young child and then educate it so it should grow to be learned like a human being. And that is totally flopped. And what's the point of all that? The human consciousness is something we don't begin to understand what it's all about. It is definitely the Holy One, blessed be He, putting the breath of life into a human being, including this mysterious ability to think that we have no clue how it really works.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Rabbi Menken, as I look to the future, I'm shifting gears slightly here. I think one of my biggest concerns for our membership is freedom of conscience, and how it's already been under attack. I'm afraid that attack is going to increase as we move forward. But I understand you've worked along several pro-value groups and have had some experience in that. I'd love to hear what you have to say about that.
Well, it's happening in a whole range of areas that those with traditional views are being denounced as bigots for simply having the same traditional views that, you know, go back 100 years ago, and these were totally uncontroversial and universally held by Americans, and often much more recently than that. Hillary Clinton said when running for Senate in 2000 that she believes that marriage is between a man and a woman. But the Democratic Party would never have made her their nominee in 2016 if she had not flip-flopped on that. So, you know, this is the thing. If you espouse traditional views, and in fact, we have a statement on orthodoxy that simply says that same-sex marriage and ordaining women and other such modern ideas are not consistent with orthodoxy. For simply saying that, we've been called homophobic, bigoted, hateful, you know, you name it. And we're watching that happen in all sorts of areas. In foster care right now, I think you may be familiar and your listeners may be familiar with Fulton v. The City of Philadelphia, which just got argued in front of the Supreme Court, where Catholic Social Services is being told, unless you're willing to certify a same-sex couple as a suitable foster family, which would, of course, violate their religious precepts, they're not allowed to do foster care. They would literally claim that it is more harmful to allow Christians to do foster care than it is to have children languishing in group homes because Catholic Social Services cannot do foster care as they did for centuries before the government came along. It's an amazing and appalling thing. We watched, there was a similar case involving Miracle Hill Ministries, which is an evangelical ministry that, amongst its other things, it is South Carolina's largest provider of foster care, largest independent provider. And due to rules from the previous Obama administration, they were going to be pushed out of providing foster care or receiving the government grants that go to foster care families to help the families take care of that child. It was actually a Jewish woman who filed a complaint against them. And we stepped forward and said, you know, on behalf of Miracle Hill, no, they're absolutely right to want to work with co-religionists to do this as part of a ministry. That's what they believe. They're not locking anybody else out of the market. They're only just saying, did they work with evangelicals? What could be wrong with that? And we need that same independence for ourselves. We're staunch advocates for religious liberty because we know what it's like to live in a society where our own religious liberty is not respected.
If a Jewish physician, your coalition for Jewish values, you would strongly support the ability, even if a procedure is legal, the ability for that physician or other healthcare professional to follow their conscience, to contend for conscientious medicine. Is that accurate?
Well, you know, this is why, for example, the Equality Act is such a dangerous idea. And how much it threatens our religious liberty. Again, it's just a way to legally classify those with traditional views as bigots simply for having their views. We have a elaborate body of religious law. I think you can see my bookcase behind me in our conversation. And the idea that we should be told to violate our religious teachings is a non-starter. A doctor would have to stop practicing medicine if told that the only way you can practice medicine is if you're going to violate your conscience on something like an elective abortion. If you believe an elective abortion is a murder and you're willing to simply walk out of the room and let somebody else do it, that you should be praised for your self-control and the fact that you're not in there screaming and trying to physically stop it from happening. That takes a lot of restraint and self-control when you're being told that what's going on in that room is the very antithesis of medical care. So to tell a doctor that they have to do that procedure themselves personally is, you know, from our perspective, again, it's not only that it's madness, but it would literally force doctors out of providing medical care.
Well, as we look at the future, Rabbi Menken, how can organizations like the Christian Medical and Dental Associations, like the Catholic Medical Association, and certainly the Coalition for Jewish Values, as well as many faith leaders in America today. How can we do a better job of collaborating on these sorts of foundational issues? I know Donna Harrison, who introduced us, this is what was on her mind. I know that how can we work together when it's clear that we align? We have alignment on our values and beliefs.
Well, the first step was literally we had to have an organization. We had to form this body. There are Orthodox advocacy groups, but their focus, because, you know, we have a lot of unique needs as a community. We all send our kids to parochial schools. We have to have the right and ability to cease work at 3 o'clock on a Friday afternoon to go observe our Sabbath in the winter. For all of those reasons, the advocacy groups that pre-existed our own by a century or more are organizations that focus upon our needs as a community and kind of stay out of the battles which have a marginal impact. As long as a doctor is not being forced to perform an abortion, even though we think that abortion on demand is an evil for society, it's not something where we're going to be the leaders in that battle, at least if you're running one of those advocacy organizations for the community's needs, because the community then is at freedom to observe its own precepts. But we needed to form our group. We needed to have a coalition for Jewish values that was willing to stand up. And now that we're here, actually, we've seen a pretty warm welcome because, again, it's like we've been discussing, the more voices you have from diverse perspectives, there's obviously a huge theological chasm between Christianity and Judaism. Mm-hmm. And yet there are areas of common cause where we work together. And it's not a matter of strange bedfellows, as the left likes to say. It's a, you know, strange bedfellows is when you have a person who observes traditional Islam working together with a so-called gay rights activist. When, of course, in Islamic societies, a gay rights activist would be thrown off a building and dragged through the street. You know, that's strange bedfellows. When as we joked earlier, the evangelical Christians are getting it from the same place the Jews had it previously. There's nothing strange about finding common cause and finding those areas where the values agenda that we're trying to push turns out to be that we're on the same page, including, most critically, full religious liberty and freedom of conscience that we both need for our differing views.
I agree. We need to be working together. And I know that there are a few organizations that are looking to create a pro-life summit. We're seeing across the country a move. I think a lot of the pro-abortion people see that Roe v. Wade is going to eventually be overturned. And so they're strategy is to begin introducing into various states in terms of introducing very radical abortion legislation. So I see a need for us to get together with other organizations. Would love to see the Coalition for Jewish Values involved in that as we gather together to fight this onslaught against the unborn.
It's interesting that you mentioned states because, Dr. Barrows, you're certainly familiar with New York State's change in legislation, which was done roughly the same week that my oldest grandchild was induced 5 weeks early due to preeclampsia. His mother, who has my daughter-in-law has since given birth to a second healthy baby boy with no preeclampsia, thankfully. They changed the law to allow my eldest grandchild, again, to be killed in exactly that circumstance. It's just horrific. It's just unbelievable that they would say that because the mother is threatened that we shouldn't induce, we can just go ahead and kill the fetus. And that is something where obviously we should be working together because just the whole philosophy behind it is so anti-medicine and so destructive. And we all recognize it. The left has done a very good job of distorting what it is to be pro-life. When you ask people, are they pro-life or pro-choice, more people will say they're pro-choice. But when you start actually asking them specifics, they come out with a much more pro-life position. I'll give you the most fundamental example to me is, as we discussed earlier, saving the life of the mother. What happens in that very odd, very off the charts case where saving the mother's life requires early termination of the pregnancy. I had a pro-life Jewish OBGYN explain to me he would not use the term abortion. He uses the term termination of pregnancy because the goal, the ideal outcome in all cases is two healthy ex patients.
That's right.
And that's what you want. It's never an abortion. An abortion is we're ending it to kill the child. A termination of pregnancy is our goal is to save the child, which is exactly why I have a healthy grandchild and a healthy daughter-in-law. And that's what you're looking for. And that's being described as a pro-choice position because in a certain circumstances, you must terminate the pregnancy. That's not a pro-choice position. That is actually the preservation of life at its ultimate. And even giving preference to the mother's life, I was told by the head of Americans, the general counsel for Americans United for Life, Steve Aden, told me that he can't identify a single national pro-life organization in the country that doesn't include a carve-out to preserve the health and the life of the mother. And that being the case, the overwhelming majority of Americans are actually pro-life. They just don't know it.
Rabbi Mencken, we've run out of time, but I just want to tell you that every day I read from the Old Testament, from Psalms King David and Proverbs King Solomon. But a passage of scripture that I've been thinking about a lot lately from the first five books of the Old Testament, from Numbers chapter 6, and many, many of our listeners, I'm sure, have heard either the UK or the New York City version of the song that's been called The Blessing. It's from Numbers 6:22. The Lord said to Moses, "Tell Aaron and his sons, this is how you are to bless the Israelites. Say to them, the Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine on you and be gracious to you. The Lord turn his face toward you and give you peace. So the Lord said, they will put my name on the Israelites and I will bless them." May God bless the Coalition for Jewish Values and the voice that you have become since 2017. Thank you for joining us today, Rabbi Mencken.
Thank you again for having me. It's been a real pleasure.
Well, there you have it, a groundbreaking interview, as they described it, for the Christian Medical and Dental Associations, because they actually had someone from the Orthodox Jewish community willing to stand up for our values, the values that they got from us, and the cause that we probably ought to be fighting for alongside each other, because for all of our differences, we do agree on the idea that a life is a sacred thing and something that we really care about. And that's why that was such a great conversation. And I think you could just hear from them how much this was encouraging to them and enables the fight for values to go forward that much more forcefully, that much more powerfully, because they know that they have the backing of people who are outside the Christian community, which, of course, should not surprise anybody, because as we discussed, they're getting them in the same, you know, from basically from their understanding of, you know, our Torah, our values, that which they get from us. So I hope you found this educational and informative. I hope you give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. Subscribe if you have not done so already and share with your friends, because we'll be coming back to you next week with another Inverted Planet podcast.